So to make a few comments vis-a-vis the previous presentation, so if you go ahead to 2014, the estimate would be for behavioral health care in Medicaid, an expansion of about $60 billion a year. $60 billion a year in behavioral health funds in Medicaid because of behavioral health conditions. And in the health insurance exchange, an expansion of about $7 to $8 billion in behavioral health funds. So almost $70 billion more a year because of the Affordable Care Act, if we can get it up and implemented. So on our website, NACBID.org, we have 12 presentations on health reform. So the very first one is one I did on the basics of the Affordable Care Act. It's an hour and a half long, and then we go through all the pieces. We have one on health insurance exchange. We have one on the Medicaid expansion. We have one on ACOs. We have one on disparities. We have one on positive mental health, et cetera, et cetera. So you can go to the website and watch those at your leisure. And if you watch the whole series, you will have a very good overview of the Affordable Care Act and the pieces in the Affordable Care Act. So the central observation I want to make today and I want to argue today is that basically all health care is local. So, you know, if I have a heart attack right now, I will live or die depending on how good the care is in a local hospital in D.C. It has next to nothing to do with who's in the White House. It has next to nothing to do with what state I'm in. It has to do with how good the care is locally. And I think also in the Affordable Care Act, I think there's the recognition that states have failed to control cost. And so I think what CMS has done is move the argument down to the local level. An accountable care organization is not a statewide organization. I was in a meeting yesterday where somebody argued that an accountable care organization is a statewide organization. I don't believe that. It's a local organization that brings together local providers to serve the population in that area. And it can be organized as a cooperative. It does not need to be a for-profit entity. Although we did not win in our arguments to have behavioral health entities create ACOs, behavioral health entities can be part of ACOs. Federally qualified health centers can form ACOs under the revised regulations, and rural health centers can form ACOs under the revised regulation. But the basic argument here that I'm making is this is local. Therefore, you got to work to develop the capacity and the quality at the local level, basically. Five components of the ACA, and obviously I don't have time to develop these very much. The first two, insurance reform, is about the expansion that was talked about in the previous presentation, the 32 million people, 10.5 million of whom already have behavioral health conditions, and 60% of whom have a substance use condition. Coverage reform, already in effect. No one under the age of 19 can be excluded from insurance coverage. By 2014, no one of any age will be able to be excluded from insurance coverage because they have a pre-existing condition. Coverage to age 26, no annual or lifetime limits, no co-pays or deductibles on prevention or promotion activities, and so on. So those are the first two areas, insurance reform, coverage reform. The other three are left to the Secretary of HHS to implement, and the Secretary has many, many assignments on quality reform, payment reform, and IT reform. So what I put in here also the dates on which these pieces become effective. For example, the insurance reform will be stood up on January 1st of 2014. I'm going to go through these five components and relate them to county activities. So, insurance reform, do the expansion, 32 million adults, core feature of the ACA. This is what's controversial in terms of mandated insurance coverage. I would argue even if the Supreme Court decides against the mandate, that won't nullify anything else here. And even if the Congress would vote the Affordable Care Act out, you have to replace it with something else. because the United States of America will go defunct financially unless we change how we organize and operate our health care system. All states, including Minnesota now, since they have a new governor, have grants to develop their health insurance exchanges, which can be state agencies, they can be 501c3s, they can be multi-state entities. You have to have integrated IT to operate this. First person comes in, you say, is this person eligible for a current Medicaid program in this state, yes or no? If yes, they must be enrolled in the current program. They can't be enrolled in the insurance expansion. I don't think most people know that. And there are huge numbers of people to be enrolled. Iowa, Little Iowa, as an example, has 1 million people to be enrolled in Medicaid in 2014. 1 million. That's a third of the population of the state of Iowa. Or it can be an interstate entity. It could be Iowa and Wisconsin and Minnesota going together to create a health insurance exchange. Another important point here, every single state has a grant to develop a consumer information exchange to help people understand what is health insurance, how do you enroll in health insurance, how do you evaluate health insurance, how do you access care once you have health insurance, and so on. I always encourage my colleagues from behavioral health to be involved in these activities because we have the people who are going to have most difficulty engaging in insurance and engaging in care. So, insurance reform, county actions, one of the issues, somebody, you mentioned California before. So, under the new California Medicaid waiver, some California counties are actually doing the Medicaid expansion early. Why would they want to do it early? And if they do it early, they have to pay the copay on the expansion at the current rate. They can't take advantage of the ACA, where it's 100% federal pay for the first 4 years. Why would you do it early? You would do it early because you get a much higher Medicaid reimbursement post-reform if you're an early adopter of reform. So we want to watch these California counties and how this plays out. Hopefully some of them will be urban counties and some will be rural counties, and we'll be able to see how this works. Work with the insurance companies will offer products through the health insurance exchange. I think one of the new things for behavioral health care here, and I guess to step back a minute, a little bit of context, I believe that if you look at this whole system, it's going to be vastly different 10 years from now. You're not going to have separately organized behavioral health services. Everything is going to be integrated. You're not going to be doing the kind of services research you do right now. All these things are going to change dramatically. So if you're going to go into the reform, you have to give up things we've hung on to in the past. And that's going to be very hard. And the older you are, the harder it is to give up things you've hung on to. So one of the examples here of a dramatic change is the public sector entities working with the insurance companies that offer products through the exchanges to provide care to people who are basically at 135 to 200% of poverty. Those people are no different than the public clients who will be at 133% or below. Well, that has never happened before. The public providers have gotten public money. They haven't really worked with the private insurance companies. Whole new model, got to develop a whole new set of relationships and so on. So we've begun reaching out to those entities to develop those relationships. Coverage reform, I told you about all of these things, and we can talk about any of them you want to. The only one I didn't mention here is the last one. The insurance companies under reform will have to raise their medical loss ratios dramatically. The medical loss ratios are now in their 60s, 60%, it's about 63, 64%. This is basically a 20% increase for most companies, which means they're going to have to spend 20% more on care, 20% more than they're spending in 2011. They have to start doing this in 2012, or they will be fined. Huge change, absolutely huge change for insurance companies here. Okay, some county actions in this area. Develop and offer new prevention and promotion products that address the coverage expansions. So example here, we got McHenry County in Illinois that has a SAMHSA grant to actually expand prevention and promotion activities to children? And you're shaking your head yes. Do you know McHenry?
Okay.
Well, that's a good example of that concept. And they're doing it early, so when it comes to be 2014, they will have stood this up. Offer new products beyond your traditional consumers. The Maryland counties have all set up an IT system to reach out to veterans and their families to help them access behavioral health services. Dramatic. Every single county in Maryland already has that capacity, basically. Quality reform, now we're in the arena where the secretary has sway. You talked about medical and health homes, huge issue, could talk all day on that. ACOs, you could talk all day about the ACOs, and quality measures. So how do you bring these together? Health homes will be operated by ACOs that will be judged on the basis of quality measures, ultimately and theoretically. I believe counties should become ACOs over time here. And we could have a long discussion of that. Either counties become ACOs, maybe the public health entity in a county becomes the core ACO around which you build behavioral health care and health and social services and so on. Quality measures, it's what we would say in the Midwest is a rat's nest, an absolute rat's nest, because everybody and their brothers working on this, and there's absolutely no leadership at the federal level, and there's no coordination. So CMS is working on quality measures for Medicaid and Medicare. SAMHSA is working on quality measures for behavioral health entities. NCQA is working on other quality measures. The National Quality Forum is working on other quality measures. The Affordable Care Act requires a small set, by small, they mean under 20 common measures for all the fields of health, which doesn't mean behavioral health is going to have different measures than primary care. They're all going to be the same, ultimately. But the secretary's given a period of time to work this out. I haven't seen any leadership on the federal level to do this yet. It's a rat's nest, an absolute rat's nest here. So what is the status? There's a new Medicaid state plan amendment to do health homes. We could talk about that. Specifically recognizes behavioral health care. The new regulations on ACOs were just published last Thursday, in fact. I'll send those to you if you want to read those. Some of the entities working on quality measure. The one thing to mention here is the meaningful use criteria. So as we get into the use of IT, electronic health records, personal health records, health information exchanges, it's going to be judged not on having it, but on how you use it. It's very interesting. So an example of this in behavioral health care, one of the criteria will be, do you do e-prescribing? And if you can't answer yes to that, then you are not meaningfully applying your electronic health record here. Could have a long discussion. So some examples in the quality area. What's going on? So preparing programs and culture for the new changes. I cite here in the New York counties. New York already has one of the Medicaid state plan amendments for a health home. They anticipate in 2012 and 2013 and each year that they will expand their revenue for behavioral health care by about $130 million of new federal funds simply because of that one Medicaid state plan amendment. So $250 million in 2 years is going into that system to begin building health homes. Plan for participation in ACO. What we're working on the idea of how county members could become examples of ACOs. And the one I would cite here is Salt Lake County in Utah. We're literally in the stage of talking about that right now. Develop a Medicaid waiver to create a public integrated behavioral health, medical health home. The Virginia counties are working on a Medicaid waiver to do exactly that. Every word in that label is fateful. So it's operated out of the public sector. It'll be integrated services in exactly the way you mean that. It will be a behavioral health home, not a health home, but it will include health care services. And they're very far along, very interestingly there. They have a very conservative governor. They had a very conservative secretary of health. These people both came in and said, we're going to contract the whole thing out to a managed care company. And the people in Virginia turned them around and said, you know, basically, this is ridiculous. These people won't know what they're doing in behavioral health care. You won't have any behavioral health care. And you will then be liable for this politically. So they're able to turn both of these people around, and both the governor, the conservative governor, and his conservative secretary now support this. Payment reform, easy to state. We're going to go from encounter-based payment systems to case and capitation rates over the next 10 years. Very important to do this because this puts the person back together. And it also allows better tying of payments to performance, and they will be case and capitation rates adjusted for performance. Very different. And the goal is by 2020, not a single federal dollar, not a single federal Medicaid dollar or Medicare dollar will be spent in a way that's not adjusted for performance. Huge, huge change. Huge change for behavioral health care where nobody's ever been held to standards. Huge change. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, yeah. One of the problems with when you measure outcomes for people with chronic serious mental illness is that you don't get a lot of change over time. So it's a performance-based kind of payment and capitation system. What does that mean when you're trying to measure
outcomes? Think
that
what it means is you better pay very close attention to the outcome measures that you're going to be advocating for in this system. And we could have a long discussion about that as well. That whole concept changed over the last 20 years, moving away from symptom reduction and functioning increases to additional measures in the community. Do you have a job? Do you have a permanent place to live? Do you have a social support network? And do you have a service system that supports those linkages, basically? Huge, huge change here. And so the goal isn't to get rid of somebody's symptoms. The goal is to have them live a life in the community. Did you have your hand up? Oh, okay. So payment reform, that's what this is essentially about. Don't need to say more about that. So who's doing things like this? So again, Salt Lake County, Utah, already operates a capitation-based system. And if you look at the work on capitation in behavioral health, there actually was more work ongoing 10 years ago than there is right now. We actually had more services research underway 10 years ago than we do now. This is an area that kind of flowered and then it died away. Now it's got to come back again, basically. So Salt Lake County is a good example of that. I just referred some people to Salt Lake County this morning to talk to them about their system. These were people in Ohio who wanted to move from their encounter-based system to a capitation system. Integrate behavioral health financial data with primary care financial data, which is required by the parity legislation. That's beginning to happen in some of the Michigan counties, and some of the urban Michigan counties are doing that, and they are actually becoming federally qualified health centers. I'm thinking of one in particular that just received that notification a couple days ago. IT reform, here the goal is to get electronic health records. We were left out of the ARRA legislation. I don't have time to develop all those reasons. We're now back lobbying to be put in. We have S-539, the Senate bill for 2011. In a day or two, literally, we will have a House bill. We will have Republican and Democratic co-sponsors, and we'll go at this again, trying to get this bill passed in 2011. If we can pass this bill, virtually every single behavioral health provider would be eligible for federal grant money to implement electronic health records. And we would value this bill at about $5 billion. However, the final statement, we do not have any assurance that such a bill will be successful, even though the Republicans don't oppose this. Interesting. The Republicans believe that we implement electronic health records, we can save about $700 billion of health care costs per year. So what are we doing? Some of our California counties are working with primary care settings to basically adopt the electronic health record that the primary care settings already operate. And a good example of that is Ventura County, that I myself have worked with. There's a very good working relationship between the county health department and the county behavioral health department, where in effect, although they're two organizations, they work very closely as one. Make counties the site for TA. Salt Lake County is literally working on SAMHSA right now to get money to get TA to put together not only its county behavioral health electronic health record, but one that also extends into the jails. And that issue was raised previously as well. Jails are a huge issue here. There are 800,000 people in jails every day in the United States. 600,000 of those people have behavioral health problems. Medicaid stops at the door. The Affordable Care Act allows Medicaid to continue for the new enrollees who are unadjudicated. So new enrollees who are unadjudicated can continue their Medicaid payments into the jails. We are now trying to argue with CMS that that ought to be extended to other Medicaid enrollees as well, basically. So what are we doing? We're creating a learning community around these issues. When Virginia develops its Medicaid waiver, we want to share that with other states so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. And then we have internal work groups that are working on interesting things. One example of that would be we're working on the issue of what are the services and what do you call people who don't have any behavioral health problem but who will receive prevention and health promotion interventions from a behavioral health entity in the future. Now, behavioral health has never worked with any of these people ever. What are we going to do here? Huge opportunity for behavioral health. We haven't spent 2 minutes thinking about this, so we're at least beginning to spend a minute or two. So we invite you to join us in this, and with this, I'm going to stop. Here's my contact information. I will send you the Affordable Care Act bill as a PDF. Why will I send it? Not because you're going to read it on Friday night, but because you, as a PDF, you can search it. And if you want to find out about care navigation, you can go in there and find every reference in the bill on care navigation or whatever else you're looking for. I'll also send you the National Prevention Strategy that just came out because it's a way of beginning to look forward into prevention and promotion and away from simply a focus on care. And then I'll send you a number of other things, commentaries I've written on health reform and so on. So let me stop and see if there are any questions here. Anybody? Yes, please.
So the expansion of Medicaid only gives the expansion only covers people at sort of the basic plan level.
Well, let me talk to that a little bit. So the Medicaid, so the insurance expansion is 32 million people. The HHS estimates 16 million will enroll in Medicaid, 16 million. The health insurance exchanges, we estimated the 10.5 million who have behavioral health conditions, 60% will enroll in Medicaid and 40% in the insurance exchanges. The baseline benefit in Medicaid for that expansion group is the same as the baseline benefit in the insurance exchange, which is what's called the essential health benefit. I'm literally going to a meeting at 3 o'clock this afternoon on the essential health benefit. So we, the Coalition for Whole Health, have produced a model behavioral health benefit to fit the essential health benefit that covers mental health and substance abuse. And we're working on this right now, and we just had Milliman. Milliman is the classic organization that produces the cost of, we gave them our benefits, produce a cost of this benefit for us. We just got the report from Steve Millick at Milliman last Friday, and so now we're going to wed that report together with our benefit, and we are in the process of visiting, and I'm going visiting at HHS this afternoon to talk to people in HHS about the work we've done before HHS ever actually puts pen to paper to create the benefit. That is absolutely fateful for what happens to behavioral health care here going forward. Most people don't even know there's such a thing as an essential health benefit. And part of the fault of this is HHS failure to communicate about the Affordable Care Act. So I always ask groups, how many of you have received a single communication from HHS about the Affordable Care Act? Is there, there's one person here?
Because
you're on a list, okay. What did you get?
I work in HHS.
Okay, you work in HHS. Okay, so good. You all need to do, and I don't want to pick on you, but HHS needs to do a much better job, because when people hear nothing, they assume the worst. And that's happening here. That will happen about, that will happen around the essential health benefit as well.
So my question is, how is that, since that benefit, the benefit that most folks on Medicaid with severe mental illness, mostly they use optional services. How is this likely to shift the sort of the basket of services?
It's not going to shift the basket for other people. What you're going to end up is a tier. You're going to have a tiered system. So you're going to have the SSI enrollees and a basket of services. You're going to have the TANF enrollees and a basket of services. And you're going to have these new people and a basket of services. They're not going to be the same thing. So you can't walk from one to the other. That will be a problem eventually. And you should not design a system that way. But we're not going to go and say, well, you need to take this down. It's ridiculous
now,
here.
The SSI service is all optional.
Yeah.
At the state level.
Yep. That's not, none of that's going to change. The Affordable Care Act only addresses the new enrollees. It does not go back and make changes in SSI and SSI qualifications or the state Medicaid plans that go with SSI that have great variability and so on. Yeah.
I realize there are a variety of things that we as a mental health section could do corporately, but I'm interested if you have particular either short-term or long-term actions that you...
Well, I think the most short-term action, the mental health section should join the Coalition for Whole Health, so you can sign on to these, you can sign on to the essential health benefits, you can sign on to the comments we do. Around, we just did comments yesterday on the health insurance exchanges. They were due on the 31st, and the Medicaid expansion was due yesterday. So we do those every time they come out, and we take them very seriously, basically. Yeah.
Just to follow up on these suggestions, we as a mental health section, of course, can do that, but when we're thinking about
here, here.
Add policies to continue to forge through the wonderful successes we have in mental health care, et cetera. So I'm saying this as a member of the mental health section, but also as a member of the governing council board and also the action board. So
very important.
I know that I'm happy to try and work with Gene and Ron and others in the room here to try and make it the more EPHA driven in general so that voice continues.
And there you're dealing with the kind of voice that mental health has in APHA, basically. And we do have some voice, but it's not a very loud voice, as I would say. Yes, please.
Are there any models of behavioral health systems in specific states or specific counties that we know of, and how can we find this information?
Very good question. So as part of our work in NACBID, we will be sending out literally in a couple of days a request to all of our members to identify some of their model practices. And so we're very interested in, you know, are you already in an ACO type arrangement? Have you already in your county done the Medicaid expansion? Those kinds of questions, so that we will compile model examples of what's going on out there. As far as I'm aware, it's never been compiled by anybody. So
how can I get it?
You can be in contact with me.
Okay.
Be in contact with me. We'll be sending this out. We'll give people till the end of the year, and then in the early months of 2012, we'll compile that and come out with a report on that. exactly what you're talking about here.
The Kaiser Family Foundation has done some review of organizations that look like accountable care organizations in North Carolina counties.
They have done very good work in North Carolina, and I was at a meeting yesterday where some of that work was presented. We can get you in contact with the people who did that original work, basically. Final question, then I need to wrap up here.
You mentioned that you have a model of essential benefits.
It isn't, but if you sign up on the sheet with your name and your email address, I'll send you the current draft of that, and would appreciate the feedback. If you look at this, give us some feedback. Tell us if you like it, and tell us if you don't like it, basically, so we can put out the best product we can get here, basically.
Who's in the Coalition for Whole Health? Who's in the Coalition?
The Coalition for Whole Health is 110 mental health and substance use national and state organizations. And we spent a long time working to get an elevator speech. You know, we want good health insurance coverage, we want good integrated care, and we want good prevention, where mental health could work well with substance abuse, and we've been able to maintain that going into the Affordable Care Act and now on commenting on the regulations.
Where's the kind of sheet to get a copy of what you want?
It's coming around here, okay? Okay, thank you very much.